Hello, friends and folks, and welcome to the Anova Tourism Committee. We're here to show you this beautiful region of definitely not upstate New York and help you understand its appeal. I'm Six Detmar.
I'm Alan Ibrahim, another member of the Tourism Committee, and my commute to get here was long and arduous because I don't have a flying Pokemon yet, but, you know, I've got my baby boy sitting at the daycare, and I told him I'd be out for a while for a meeting, and...
As an accident on Route 3, and you had to surf through, you know, Wellspring Cave, and... Oh.
And then Breeder Adelaide was like, I'm gonna, you should hunt a zebra, and I found a zebra on the way from Route 3. Let's talk about what we did in Pokemon this week. First of all, any Pokemon news, Pokemon updates you want to talk about that are not the podcast related?
Yeah, I mean, I think I wanted to real quickly hit on Pal World a bit. Now, folks, stop. I know you're about to...
Hold on.
I know there are a lot of people. I will give you a timestamp to skip this, first of all. But before I do, let me say, I am not interested in talking about the controversy. I want to talk about mechanical design. Pretty much that's all I'm going to do. All right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Don't yell at us.
I myself have muted the name of the game on Twitter because it was just getting that insufferable. So I understand. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to be part of that conversation. That timestamp is going to be 1402. 1402. What I'm here to say is, I think, like, first of all, Pal World is a game that's really specifically building on Pokemon Legends Arceus in really clear ways. Like, it even has the, like, multi-catch, like, XP boost and stuff. And I think what it's revealing to me is the audience feels a way, and I might feel the same way, which is we want to be able to, like, one of the main things about Pal World is your pals, which are just Pokemon, are strong and can do cool shit, right? But also your player character can do things, which is not part of the Pokemon series.
Right.
And that's really appealing to me, actually.
What's appealing about it?
I mean, I think, first of all, it makes this feel like more of a partnership, right? The thing about being a Pokemon trainer is you're really good. It's like, it feels like being a really good CEO, right? Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I'm really good at my job. I tell Charizard to kill that man and then he kills that man. I'm like, okay, well, what did you do?
It's sort of a weird, it becomes a Team Rocket simulator almost.
In a little, in ways, yeah. And I also just think you're able to, like, you're able to have more direct action. Like, honestly, when I first played Pokemon and I encountered a bush that was in my way, and it's like, you can't cut this down yourself, go get a Pokemon to learn a hidden technique called Cut. And I'm like, I mean, you can still gate me. I understand that. But how come I'm not just cutting this down? People know how to cut down bushes.
Right. Like, I have to be. This game makes me realize, like, Pal World makes you realize how weird it is in Pokemon that your player character has no method of interacting with things besides throwing Pokeballs and jumping in some cases.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not looking for the next Pokemon game to have a bunch of base building. I don't know that that's what I want. But it is, yeah, it is like, okay, like, I fought a boss and I threw my Pokemon out and it's doing stuff and I am, like, backing it up with a musket, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, we're both doing our part here. This is a real partnership. And also, you get access. The other thing they do is, because your character is able to have more, like, direct action, you can have interesting team-ups, I guess is what I would say, right? Like, early on, you get the Fox Parks, which is not a great name, but it's just a fox that breathes fire, right? And it's, like, special team-up move is you pick it up and it acts like a flamethrower for you, right?
Right, right.
Or you have a little squirrel guy that can ride on your head and shoot at people, right? Kind of like Mushu in Kingdom Hearts 1.
Right. Normal comparison anyone would make.
Yeah, definitely. It's just, I think there are, it's a lot more imaginative about the relationship between Pokemon and people and the role that people can play in that relationship. Mm. And that's, I think, a big part of what people are being drawn to.
Yeah, I would almost argue, and I'm not as far in as you. How many hours have you played?
Let me check. I've got Steam right here. I have played 7 hours.
Okay, you've played a little bit more than I have. I feel like the Pokemon are tools in this game and not creatures that live and exist on their own. That is an issue I'm having early on. I already can tell that your relationship to them changes, especially when you get more abilities and things and you start being able to ride them and, like you said, like work with them more. I have 3 hours in the game. And okay. So far, they have been workers for me. They build things for me. I build beds for them. It's a transactional relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's funny and that markets well as like this is like Pokemon with guns. But really early on, it's just like, yeah, I'm going to beat the shit out of this chicken and then I'm going to have it build me or mine wood for me. That's mm-hmm. what it is. And you just get used to that. That stops being weird after a while. I'm just still curious how that relationship progresses over time.
I mean, I think part of what I'm getting to, like, I think it branches in a couple of ways. I do think you're right. But, like, one thing I will do, and this is just, there's no mechanical incentive to do this, right? So this is just a thing about me, I guess. But, like, when I have a project, right, it's like, oh, I want to build a thing. And then, like, one of the pals runs over to help, right?
Yeah.
Afterwards, I always give them a pet. Because thank you for helping, aww. You know? And, like, there's no bonus to doing so. It's just, like, me trying to express. But it's, like, me trying to create a relationship that the game does not naturally have, as you say. Mm. And then you get into some of the Mad Magazine shit as you go on. There's an item I could unlock that I have not, which is the Butcher's Knife, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, like, I mean, think about it. Like, it's like butchering a hog, but Pokemon.
Pokemon, yeah,
right. You can take your fucking Kativa and be like, I'm gonna cut you up for meat, and I'm like, I don't want to do that. I don't think it should be off limits, right? I'm not here to be like, how dare you put this in your game, but it is very like, you know, like there's the Mad Magazine cover with like Pikachu like tied up with a stick of dynamite at its mouth, and it's like, you just thought this was edgy. This is dumb.
Yeah, I think it's just that's what this whole game feels like to me, though. Mm. Like, I constantly feel like it's distancing you from the pals by being like, look, they're creatures, they're tools. You have to kill them. You have to eat them. Like, yeah, it sounds fucked up. And if you think of it as Pokemon, it doesn't circle well. But you just have to think of it as a survival game. And they happen to be the animals. If this was a survival game and that was a deer or an elk that could also just happen to help you, then, like, yeah, you would be able to stomach it a little bit more. You know, humans have done this for literally forever, since there have been humans.
But what if you could put a leash on a deer and lead it home and it would start, like, mining for you? That's, like, that would change your relationship to the deer, right?
Yeah. That's why it's so funny that the first viral clip I saw of this game was that you could throw Pokeballs at, or whatever, the Pal Balls, Pal Spheres, at humans.
Mm-hmm.
And you can theoretically catch humans. It's just like the coding does not think of these as creatures. They're just resources that can do things for you, which is fine. I think for one of those types of games, it's fine. I enjoy the loop of like, okay, I need more wood. I'm going to go farm, make a berry farm. Cool. I made a berry farm. I have a nice little like hamlet that I call my household. And now I'm going to branch out and explore a little further and build another workbench so I can go further. Oh, I'm sleepy. I have to go find a bed. Like, all that stuff is, like, nice. I'm still finding it a little tedious early on. Like, I haven't, like, found a moment where I was like, wow, like, this is worth the effort and time I've put into getting gear. But I think I know it's doing really well. I think I'll probably find that spot eventually with it.
Maybe. Maybe you just won't click with it. You know, I think a lot of it is selling just on the back of the imagery that they're playing with. And, like, that doesn't have, once you get in the game, it's like the imagery is the imagery and you kind of get used to it. I do think it is doing a little more than perhaps you're, I don't know about like giving it credit for, but maybe perhaps more than you've seen or noticed, but like there is some stuff of like, they have like cute animations when they finish tasks. And like, there is some attempt to give them like charm and personality, right?
Mm-hmm.
That I think, and you know, a lot of the designs are obviously just very simple riffs on Pokemon, right? But the designs are largely not bad. And so there are some critters here I think are fun. And there's also you get little basically, Palpedia Pokedex, right? You get Pokedex entries right. when you catch them. And some of them are kind of interesting and some of them are again edgelord garbage, right?
Right.
I got one yesterday which was this bird Pokemon, this bird pal will find abandoned pal children, right? Like cubs or whatever, right? And it'll take them home to its nest and it'll raise them in its own so that it could eat them later when they're fat. It's okay, shut up. This is dumb. Mm-hmm.
That's the big thing. That's what I often feel mixed about. It's okay, this is edgy because punching the first, everyone says the first time you punch a cat or whatever, it feels bad. It's yep, it does. I'm punching an animal with big cute eyes that they designed that to be hilariously violent, cartoon violent.
But they don't, I think part of the reason I don't want to get the butcher knife is I feel like it'll change this, but you don't kill these things. When you, they faint like Pokemon. They fall down and they get dizzy eyes.
Yeah.
Which.
But cutting them up erases them from the map and turns them into a resource that you can eat.
Probably. We don't know. Neither of us have done it.
Yeah. I've gotten meat that I think was pal meat.
Yeah. Oh, you can absolutely get it, but you get it when they faint.
True. They just drop a little bit. Yeah. Maybe they drop more.
It has the logic of an MMO drop. It isn't necessarily what they had on them. It's just what the loot table gave you,
Right. Oh, yeah. Pal World. I'll continue messing with it periodically. It's kind of been my game to play before bed to relax a little bit.
Same. Yeah.
It's very low key, especially my little single player world. I haven't touched multiplayer, but my PC gaming friends are still playing it a lot.
And it's go ahead.
Just my last thing about this, the role of this game in my friend groups is not what the discourse is of oh my god, it's violent Pokemon, but it's another one of those viral survival games that everybody plays together on the first week, mm-hmm. and then one person stays up late and plays a couple extra hours, and we come back the next day and they have built a utopia, and they're I found a YouTube video or a Reddit post that said where all the good farming spots are, and now I'm level 7 million. And it's okay, this isn't actually... This happens with Minecraft. It happened with Rust. It happens over and over again every time one of these comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's happened with them yet, but I'm still anticipating it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm intentionally avoiding looking anything up for this. Not because... not in the same way I avoided looking things up for, Scarlet and Violet, but, because in these survival games, once you start looking things up, you get bored.
Right. Exactly.
So... Yeah, I have also I have also started to get a little bored, but I was I can't quit before I see the guns, and I unlocked the guns last night before my last session. I haven't built any yet because I need more resources. Ooh. But it's okay, let me see what you got. I can have a squirrel ride on my head with a submachine gun while I'm holding a rifle. Once I build that stuff.
Right. All in good time.
But that's not really why we're here. Let's get on to the main topic of Pokemon Black and White and our journey to our second gym badge.
Hell yeah, baby. Let's get the fuck into it. We beat another gym this week, Six.
We did.
We began our adventure on Route 3, heading out from our last town. And some highlights of Route 3, the daycare center, which I think we talked a little bit about last week. I did end up leaving a Pokemon here. I left my Patrat here. I will come back to them at the end of the game and update y'all about where we're at.
I see.
It's because I don't usually do breeding unless it's one of the gens where I'm trying to make a team.
Mm-hmm.
So he's there. The daycare. I like that the daycare is run by an elder couple, but the human daycare is just next door and their daughter runs it. Again, just a cute little touch.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice. I feel like I keep trying to psychoanalyze this is how Japan sees America, right? And it's we've had Pokemon daycares before. Have we had kid daycares, or is this Japan being man, Americans just love dumping their kids at daycare?
Well, I actually wrote that in my notes too, but I wrote it a bit more as we can't this is just how children are taken care of when the parents are at work, mm-hmm. and the capitalist necessity of both parents having to work is a particularly American thing. I don't think they're going for like that brutal commentary, but it's also just true.
Mm-hmm.
We do have more daycares. Not to say that Japan doesn't or the rest of the world doesn't, but we have a lot of I know several coworkers of mine who use daycare services.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And, you know, when we're not judging for that, I just wonder if we're being judged for that. To a certain, but I do think you're right. It's just like, no, it's like this is America is a very, I mean, in ways like Japan, a very like work-centric culture, right? And so it's a good opportunity for them to dive into this side of its consequences, right?
Exactly.
Speaking of Pokemon like daycare and breeding stuff, like you said, you don't tend to do like. I feel like historically speaking, I have bred for like one particular shiny because I thought it was really cool and breeding was not very hard in that game, right?
Yeah.
And I have bred to get the like, you know, like the baby Pokemon, right? The exclusives for
breeding. Oh, sure.
But like beyond that, I feel like I've never really engaged with that system very much.
Yeah, I think for like the average player or children or whatever, it's more a system of like it instead of needing EXP share, you have a way to passively level Pokemon. Like,
sure.
I'm never going to use Patrat. So I do actually want to level it, maybe just to evolve it and then take it out. Like, that's how I used to use it as a kid, was to evolve Pokemon that I didn't feel like leveling. Because it's technically more efficient to level your own guys while one of them's in daycare. And then on the higher level, it's I'm going to shiny farm. I'm going to farm for EV IVs. Like, there are low level and high level uses of the Pokemon daycare system.
Yeah, that's true. I always let myself get stuck up on the like the IV EV logic, right? Of like,
yeah.
I guess it's EVs is the one I'm talking specifically about. Of like, oh, but if they are in daycare, they won't their stats won't be as good as if I naturally level them. But like, why do I care? I'm never using a Watchog. I'm never gonna do it.
And even if you are, you're not using it in competitive play. Like, yeah, people often obsess over the EVIV stuff, thinking like I cannot touch competitive unless I do this, and it's like 75% of the people you play online are not, they didn't max all their dudes out and make them perfect, don't worry about it. It's like how I used to be afraid of fighting games until Street Fighter 6, and I learned to just play ranked and not feel bad about playing ranked because they're matching with people who are of your skill level theoretically.
I still feel bad sometimes, but you know,
I always feel bad, I just feel less bad.
Okay, fair enough.
So the daughter runs the human daycare. We run a little bit further into Route 3 and Sharon challenges us. Oh, no. And then we, after the fight, we see that Team Plasma stole a child's Pokemon. And Bianca chases after them. I love that in this moment, there is actually no urgency. And so they're like, hurry the fuck up. We got to get to Wellspring Cave. And I'm like, ooh, my starter's almost leveled up. Let me do a couple fights over here and like run in the grass, fight the double battle. Hunt a zebra, poke it. I caught a whatever the zebra guy is. I did a bunch of stuff before I actually saved the child. Zebstrika is the one I caught. Were you going to say something? I interrupted you there.
No, you're good. I mean, I think one of the things that's interesting about this, because we get, you know, Team Plasma takes this Pokemon and runs into Wellspring Cave, right?
Yep.
And, like, I ran back through all of our areas after I got to the stopping point for our session. I ran back through to take more notes. My first time through, I was like, I have nothing to say about this place, right? But
yeah,
Wellspring Cave is interesting because this is a dungeon later in the game, like a level like 60 something dungeon, right? And you just get this like to poke your head in, and it's supposed to intrigue you, I guess, and it just doesn't.
Yeah, it's a cave. It's also a Zubat cave, except it's a Woobat cave. Like, imagine if you got to go into Zubat cave in Gen 1, and there was a rock that you had to use strength on, and it was like, well, when you come back here, you can fight way more Zubat and maybe a Golbat. It's like, that's not exciting.
Yeah, I don't care.
There's nothing inherently exciting about Wellspring Cave other than... Also, there are Roggenrollers in here. I didn't catch any.
And Drillbur.
If you could do, oh yeah, the special spawn.
Yeah, the dust cloud. Yeah. It's interesting because Team Plasma like seems. I feel like we get our first picture of like Team Plasma as a divided group here.
Yeah.
Because we had, you know, previously we're like, oh, they're preaching, you know, like Pokemon liberation, but secretly they're evil, right? And The picture I feel like you get here with a specific exchange of dialogue is some of them are true believers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have these guys and they're like, oh man, we just want this kid's Pokemon, piss off already. And then backup shows up and you beat the backup. And one of them says this line to you, right? As yeah. you beat them, which is like, they're like, it's a shame how you're treating your Pokemon. And they say,
yeah.
one day you will understand your complacency in this. And I'm like, damn, you're cooking.
You wrote that in a kid's game. Let's go. See, every once in a while, the Team Plasma stuff is just like, oh, and then they don't do anything with it.
But you can paint in the margins. You can imagine this world where it's an organization that was genuinely started with a good cause and was just co-opted, right?
Yeah, exactly. That there are people in here who get it, and then their leadership is so weird and corrupt that they're being led astray from the actual mission, which this person seems to get.
And that the game doesn't actually care and will never really, will only have lines like this. It will never have anyone engage with lines like that.
I'm thinking a lot about Black and White 2 right now. I need to tell you some stuff about Black and White 2 after this. That's okay. Really stupid how they handle this. Another fun little note, if we're going to overanalyze this, I need to stop saying that. The whole point of this podcast is to overanalyze things. There's nothing else to do in here until we have surf. There's some shallow water to walk on.
Mm-hmm.
There is the TM for thief.
Yeah.
Reminding us that Team Plasma are thieves.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's why that's there, huh?
Sure. There's no point in overthinking the TM placement, but I just thought it was charming.
We also get our introduction to double battles here.
There's a double battle right before you go in, though, right? Because there's the twins.
Right. So it wasn't for me because... If you
go around them,
well, if you walk up to the first one and talk to them, then you fight two single battles. And if I'd realized, I would have triggered the double battle because I think that's more fun.
Oh,
but if you talk to them individually, you can fight them individually.
Right.
But the Dark Grass and also Team Plasma give you no such option.
No, that's a real double battle. I used to think double battles were so cool and innovative, and now I kind of just find them slow and a little annoying.
I think they're good for competitive, right?
Yeah.
I think there are more interesting options in competitive for double battle. But in single player, it's just like, okay, I have my strong Pokemon and I have my less strong Pokemon, and the strong Pokemon will one-shot their enemy and then one-shot the other enemy.
And then the battle is over. The other one will wait patiently.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So we save the kid's Pokemon. We give it back. Bianca's like, thanks for being a good person. I mentioned wanting to talk about Bianca more last week, and then we didn't really have time to get into it. Mm-hmm. I just want to make it clear. I think one of the things I like about Bianca, besides the fact that she is a fail girl and we love people like that, is she is very different from how, like, you were mentioning that the main character's mom is very, like, supportive of your goal, especially early on. They come up and help you. And Bianca's parents are like, we don't want you to go out and do this stuff. We don't think you're ready for it. Seems dangerous. And she does it anyways. So I think that there's an element of storytelling that, like, her sensitivity comes from being told that you're not good enough a lot. And I just really like that detail. Even if it's never, like, super duper fleshed out, I think Bianca is an underrated Pokemon character.
Yeah, there's some stuff with her later in the game that I will really want to talk about when we get there, because there are... The game tries to present with Bianca, like, what has your journey been about? And I think it's really interesting how it does that. But yeah, so far, she is just kind of like... She's sort of the, like, our plus one, like you and Sharon, right? Because Sharon is the archetype is the rival, right? But she's not a rival, definitionally. She's just fills that slot in a character, in a Pokemon roster. She is... your friend, and usually not particularly useful. And I feel like this is part of the problem. I mean, like, dipping back to Power World real quick, if there was more stuff that, like, trainers could do as just trainers that we could see, I feel like Bianca would be maybe better at that stuff, though she's also kind of, like, klutz-coded, so maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that it is just like, okay, the only thing you can be to show proficiency in this world is to Pokemon battle well. It's like, well, she doesn't. So
she just doesn't. So she's considered not useful here.
Yeah.
If only Bianca could find a career that didn't involve her battling Pokemon.
Alas, that's not possible. Good try.
Oh, well. So we catch a Blitzel. He warns us about the double team. We do that whole thing. We fight a Roggenrola for the first time. I love that little guy. I love the little freaky dude.
And Woobat.
We didn't talk about this before. This is a Woobat. I do like Woobat more than Zubat for sure. We didn't talk about how clutch it is that you can catch a Munna so early in this game, which means that you have a sleeper from like minute one, which is just fantastic when you're trying to catch stuff.
It is certainly very useful with Yawn, but the problem I think with Munna is just that it's the game's Abra, and Abra, you know, once Abra turns into Kadabra, it hits like a truck, and Munna hits like a bumper car.
Yeah, I for Munna so far have been using Yawn and then switching out. Munna's not a fighter at all. I think you can get it. You can get it some good moves eventually, but
I think Masharna is once you get Masharna, it's okay. But yeah, like I'm throwing some Psy beams out there when there's type advantage, but not super impressed.
We're gonna need a Moonstone before we can do that, unfortunately.
Alas.
On the way to Route 3, real quickly, we do get one of those little inter-route gates that are in most Pokemon games, I think, at least since like Gen 3, maybe Gen 2. Gen 1 has them, like in the bike. Yeah, certain routes have them.
Yeah.
These get memed a lot because there's a news ticker inside of all of them. Actually, a pretty fun idea. You can walk right up to it. It plays that great little like news ticker. The when you're in that little connecting area, there's that great chill music, and the news will be like, "Oh, the weather is this," or whatever. Or Team Plasma just stole a Pokemon from a kid. It always updates with the story, so it's worth reading those quickly if you just want to see the world kind of react to what you're doing. I think it's a very cool detail that can go underappreciated. And the meme of it is that people change the text of it to say stuff like, what the fuck kind of name is Nate or whatever.
Yeah, or like, imagine wearing like a vest and like denim jeans, couldn't be me, LOL. You know, it's just like random, yeah. You know.
Dunks, yeah, there was a Twitter account that updated for a few years that was just doing edits of those.
Yeah.
And they're pretty good. There's a Cervic person in this one also who asks if you prefer playing outside or playing inside at home.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that comes of this at all?
I don't think so. They're just sort of like, oh, you seem chill. And I'm like, okay.
And then I did it again and I was like, I like going outside. She was like, oh, you seem outdoorsy. I was just curious. It's like, what the... That was weird.
Whatever you say. But sure.
Character building. I can see how somebody was like, this is how you define your character a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we arrive then in the main city that we're talking about today, which is Nacreen City. Or Sheepbo City. A pearl of a place.
So let's talk about name for a bit, shall we?
Yes.
Nacreen City is an interesting one. Because, okay, Nacreen, what is Nacreen from?
Nascent, maybe?
It's from Nacre, actually. Because Nacre is a material also known as Mother of Pearl. It's the lining inside of a shell of certain mollusks, like oysters, abalone, or top snails. You know how pearls get made, right?
Extreme pressure?
No, that you're thinking of a diamond. Diamond is extreme pressure. It's coal, becomes a diamond. The way a pearl gets made is a piece of, like some manner of irritant, like something like a piece of sand or a little rock or something, ends up trapped in the shell of one of these creatures, and it rolls around and around and around and around and gathers up layers of mother of pearl over and over and over until it becomes a pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting because also you get I was reading about this a bit, and you also get the difference between a natural pearl and cultured or artificial pearls. Natural pearls really just have tons of layers because usually the base thing like managed to slip inside the shell, so it has to be very small. But like artificial pearls, cultured pearls, they basically like take a marble and give it one layer and say good. So obviously the natural ones are a lot more, prized. Also, they just dissolve in acid.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's just like calcium, so they would just dissolve. Every day. But really, it's more named for Nacreous Clouds, which you would think is Bulbapedia doing some real reaching, right?
Mm.
But the Japanese name of a Sheepbo city is after Sheepomon, which is, again, another clothing pattern, like our Ivy one before, which is a sort of like a like overlapping like cloud pattern, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
right.
Nacretius clouds are also known as polar stratospheric clouds. These are the clouds that happen near the poles, very high up, that almost look like aurora borealis. They're very like pearlescent, multicolored, and glowing.
Oh. What are you doing your research learning about clouds? What do you think that has to do with the city?
I think it's supposed to reflect, like, I mean, I think there is a level of the nacre thing of, like, you know, mother of pearl is kind of like the way, this is all going to be a reach, right? But it's about this city being like an industrial location that has been converted into a place of capital. It's sort of like, it had this original purpose and it's turned to this entirely other purpose, right? Obviously, originally, nacre is just supposed to be a lining on the inside of the shell that's supposed to protect the creature, but it has been turned into a work of art over time.
Right, yeah, because this one is Williamsburg. This is the closest thing to Nacrine City in real life.
What is Williamsburg?
Williamsburg, New York? Are you not familiar with Williamsburg?
I am not familiar with Williamsburg, New York.
So this is also technically a reclaimed city, right? It's a bunch of like construction material and like house, you know, not housing, but like warehouses turned into housing by artists. That's what Nacrine City's whole deal is.
Mm-hmm.
Williamsburg is technically also that. It's more just gentrified. Williamsburg is like one of the most infamously gentrified, also known as like the hipster district of New York City.
Gotcha.
I've been there a few times. I try to avoid going there. A lot of like parties are there. You can buy really good hot sauce in Williamsburg. I don't spend a lot of time there IRL, but that's what they're going for clearly in Nacrine. And it lines up with the map of New York that we would be in Williamsburg by this point.
It's really funny then that we would get like, in the real world, we get an industrial city that became an artistic city that became a commercial city, right? It's like, yes, the industrial sort of looped back around to the more, exactly, profitable version of that.
I'm sure if Nacrine lasted long enough, if this like was just lasted longer, it would become that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see in Black and White 2 how the culture of Nacrine changes.
It's funny, the story of like the environmental storytelling here, because it seems like what happened here is, I from my brief looking at this Wikipedia page, is not quite the same as what happened with Williamsburg. This looks like this was a speculative location.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have a bunch of warehouses and they have train tracks, and the train tracks like start and end very quickly. So it's like, yeah, there was some plan to make a railroad. And this company was like, we're going to get ahead of this. We're going to build like a train depot at this location, and we can ship all our stuff from here, and we'll build some tracks. And then the plan changed, and the train never arrived, and the thing just dried up.
Right. It looks tentative. It looks temporary.
Mm-hmm.
Or like we were going to build something here, and then we didn't. It's like the edges of your Minecraft world, to be nerdy.
Being able to see like in the middle of town this like, you know, concrete and steel, perfectly like elegant, mm-hmm, railroad track that just outside of town instantly decays into nothing is striking.
Right, and then the railroad becomes wooden and like decrepit, and you're just in like pools of water next to the railroad, and it's like, this is not being taken care of. Simply, there's no infrastructure for this.
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's got a cool vibe. It's a cool early city to come to also, because it doesn't feel like, oh man, like we're about to go to some much bigger areas. If I remember correctly,
I feel like this town's full of fake ass bitches.
Say a little more.
I mean, so you have, it's, you know, it's like the town of like artists, and it's like, oh, we have like, we've turned all these warehouses into houses, and it's like, okay. Uh-huh. Sure, I mean, you know, make use of what you've got. I respect that. But like, your musician is like some accordion player hanging out on the patio. You're like, your local restaurant is just like, okay, you serve soda? I don't care. And like, yeah. I'm thoroughly unimpressed by, it feels like a tourist trap of a city.
I think it's so, again, it's something that will become a tourist trap. I get the sense that Nacrine is a place that, in the universe of Pokemon at least, kind of stays out of the way, and people don't come here unless they have to. Because this is like a bridge ride away from downtown New York, from, you know, the financial district.
It's equivalent. True. And also this whole like arm of the Anova region, right? From Nacre City to Straeton down to Nozuma and all that. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing really like, you would be perfectly justified in never coming over here.
Never coming here. Exactly.
This isn't on the way to anything else.
Right. This is just, we happen to be from outside of town and we're going to be going into the city. And this is a smaller kind of place. It feels like a buildup. Like, you know, Stryton is like small town, local people, local businesses. And then Nacarine is more like, oh, like there's artists and they came from somewhere else and they have an awareness of the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to go to Castelia, which is the financial district, like as bustling as it gets. Right. So
yeah.
It's sort of the buildup, the gradual buildup of your character's journey into adulthood. Continuing on with that idea.
Yeah, coming from the small town and making your way, seeing a couple of other types of places before you get to the big city next episode.
The Large Apple, yes. So some other cool features of Nacarine, just like going down the list here. We've got a friend raider. They analyze how much you hang out with your Pokemon. We have our first trader. Who wants to take a Petalil for a Cottonee.
A Cottonee for a Petalil, depending on your game.
Right. Oh, so yours is a Cottonee for a Petalil?
Uh-huh.
That's cute. I love that. And so they give you the other version opposite, basically. Sharon gives us a berry for some reason, and then he tells you about, hey, go check out the city. Let's go do stuff. There's a decor designer here who I believe I have their name written down as Loblolly.
That's correct. A Loblolly is a tie-in to the Pokemon Dream World, like, Flash game. It was, like, HTML. But, like, you used to be able to, like, go onto this, like, very minimalist, like underbuilt, like, Neopets and catch Pokemon and then import them into the game. And if you did that, Loblolly would, like, give you furniture for the Flash game. HTML game, sorry. Listen... I don't literally mean Flash, but it's a Flash game.
No, people know what you fucking mean. Yeah. Loblolly's cute. She's also in the manga, which is fun.
What a weird thing to carry over, but okay.
Right? Exactly. There's the accordion player? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guitar player and a poet in one of the apartments, which, again, artists. They're just doing mm-hmm. artist stuff. There's a big cafe here. Did you get a chance to hit it up on a Wednesday? Did you look up what they give you? I kind of forgot to.
They give you
like lemonade.
I think they give you soda on Wednesday and like lemonade on Saturday. Yeah.
Okay. I like the idea of Pokemon doing those events, but when I told you that and you're like, "Is this fucking Animal Crossing?" I started to realize it can be obnoxious, especially when you're playing it like this and. You're like, I just want to go to the next place, dog. Like, don't.
Well, it was also just like we had a bit of miscommunication. I was confused as to what you meant because the way you set it up for me was like, oh, you can't go to Nacarine City until Wednesday. And I'm like, what? The doors are locked until Wednesday? What are you talking about?
No. You can even go into the restaurant. You just don't get a thing. All they tell you, this is what I meant, was all they tell you at the restaurant right now is we have a special on Wednesdays.
Uh-huh.
And all they do is they give you a drink.
I assume at this point, since we're recording on a Friday, they would say they have a special on Saturdays, right? That's probably what they do now.
Oh, probably. They tell you when the next special
is. Oh, wait, no. Yeah. No, sorry. This is me. This is what happens when you read wiki pages. The Saturday is only in two.
You can't get a lemonade. Rip. So you only get a lemonade in this one.
Seems like.
Amazing. Well, not really worth going to. Another thing that I really love that they do in this game. So I mentioned last time that the previous Dryton's Gym is a restaurant that people go to and they have this whole theme of serving up. But it feels still like an event. Like you are going to go to the restaurant because that's where you fight the gym.
Mm-hmm.
The Nacarine Museum just also happens to have a gym in it. This is such a cool detail about Unova, is none of the gyms are like bespoke buildings designed for fighting in. They are all something else that also... functions as a gym.
For gyms to survive around here, they all had to become barcades.
Kind of, yeah. Overpriced. There's a grilled cheese sandwich next door. Store grilled cheese sandwich place. That's a Boston-specific reference. Don't worry about it. Shout out to A4Cade, I guess. This museum is great. Another one of those, like, why do I come here in a regular Pokemon game other than to be like, wow, a skeleton. And... they make this one actually pretty interesting.
Bones.
Before you go in to check out the bones, and does stop you for another fight. He has a Timpole and a Timber now. And then, such a deeply normal thing to say, he says, I don't have enough power. If only I, an 11-year-old boy, had infinite power, you know what I need? He's Reshiram.
Or Zekrom in my game.
Zekrom, yeah. So he's... Which... What could that be? We'll find out eventually. Speaking of the gyms not just being gyms, the gym leaders are not just gym leaders. They all matter to the story.
Like, this one's gimmick is that she's so married. Because when we talk about Hawes...
Talk about Hawes, my favorite boy. So, the director of the museum.
Yeah, you enter the museum, and he's like, oh, welcome to the museum. Oh, let me take you a little, I'll give you a little tour. The gym's in the back, and he shows you around. He's like, oh, this is this skeleton of a clearly just a Dragonite. Here's like, you know, some bones that like probably Cubone had, and here's this rock. It's just a rock. Anyway, here's the entrance to the gym where my beautiful, gorgeous wife works. I love her so much. And you're like, I mean, he doesn't, obviously, the dialogue's just, this is where my wife works, but like the vibes are so wife guy. It's like breaking the meter.
So wife guy. Especially when you meet Lenora and you're like, you know what? I would be a wife guy for Lenora. She's so cool and chill and cottagecore, I would say. She's giving cottagecore lesbian despite it being extremely married, straight hat married.
I mean, listen, we all need a beard. It's fine.
That's exactly right. I think that's true. So just quickly, the things in the museum. Armaldo fossil, Gen 3. Dragonite skeleton, Gen 1. A Deoxys fossil. Or not fossil, like a piece of the meteorite. Spoiler alert, when you catch Deoxys in this game, this is where you change its form. You talk to the meteorite. Cubone bones, some manuscripts, and a rock that we don't know about yet. Mine was black. Yours was white, probably, or other way around.
I think it was the other way around. I don't know.
I might correspond to your version. There's a rock here that you'll come back to. Also, there's a Clark here that will identify fossils. So just keep the Nacrine City quote gym museum in the back of your head.
Gotcha.
Hawes gives us a fresh water, and we head into the actual gym, which is a library in the back of a museum. So cool. Such a good vibe. A library where the gym challenge is that you have to do research.
Kind of.
Kind of. You just have to pay attention to some things and then click the things, and you can brute force it if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
We're now 0-2 for gyms that you can brute force. I don't know how I feel about that. It feels like they wanted to do challenging stuff, like to make the kids' brains work a little bit, but they were like, people are going to get annoyed. Let's just make it so you can talk to everyone and then not fail out. It's fine.
The most annoying thing to me is, so of course they just get like, you're opening up books and there are notes hidden in the books with like, you need a book that's about, you know, something that shoots steam out of its head. You're like, okay, it's a train.
Yeah.
And the last puzzle.
Fuck the last puzzle.
I remembered after it happened, I was like, shit, this got me when I was a kid too, where they're like, okay. And the solution is, like, back two, left one, like, up two, right one, like this sort of, like, series of directions. And if you're any kind of normal human being, you will then just try to take those as, like, steps you should take with your feet. Yeah. Since this is a grid-based game, and it will make you walk into the ladder you're standing on already.
Yeah, it just loops you around.
They're telling you to do that for shelves, but that is entirely unclear.
Yeah. It's a bad puzzle.
It's a bad puzzle.
I figured it out this time eventually without looking at... No, I think I figured it out, but I was still not executing correctly. Because I was like, wait, back from which one? From the one I'm at? And then I eventually just kind of brute forced it.
Yeah, I like did it wrong twice. And I was like, well, what the fuck? And I was like, well, maybe it wants me to start from the edge of the shelf. And then I was like, wait... This probably just wants me to go to different... And I was like, oh, I could do the directions. And I was like... If it wants me to go to another shelf, then it wants me to go to the one shelf I haven't gone to already.
Exactly. Right, exactly.
So.
So some stuff happens here, right? You finish the third puzzle. The first one's a memory puzzle. The second one's logic. And the third one is a riddle, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And a secret staircase opens up, and you go downstairs, and you see Lenora. Now, before we rush into things, Lenora has two Pokemon. She's a normal-type gym leader. What are her two Pokemon again?
She has a fucking Lillipup and a Watchdog, is that right?
Yeah. Or not Lillipup, it's the evolved form.
Oh, you're right, it's Herdier and Watchdog.
Yeah, she has a Herdier and a Watchdog. The Herdier just spams Takedown, which does a little bit more damage than it has any right to, and the Watchdog just spams Retaliate, which does much more damage than it has any right to. This battle is meant to humble you. It's, Lenora seems easy. maybe you're like a little sexist and you're like, female gym leader, who the fuck cares? You're probably going to eat shit the first time you do this boss fight. Because, and you're like normal type. Since when is normal type hard? You idiot. Didn't you play Gen 2? Do you not have traumatic memories of fighting Whitney's fucking Miltank? Me talking to myself trying to play this game for the first time? It's going to kick your ass.
I thought this was really easy.
Did you not need to like go on a fucking week-long training arc to beat Lenora?
I mean, remember the thing that I think just a core Pokemon experience and approach thing that differs between the two of us. When I get to a gym, I say, okay, how much of the surrounding areas can
how
I explore?
How much further can I go?
And what the secret to their defeat will lie there. And it's like, yes, I went a little bit further. I explored the outskirts of Pinwheel Forest, which we'll talk about in a minute. Yeah. And I got, not only did I get a fighting type Pokemon, I also got fighting type moves for my starter.
Yeah, you get Arm Thrust for the...
For Pignite, yeah.
Pignite, thank you. I went in arrogantly and was like, Pignite knows Arm Thrust, I'm going to kick her fucking ass. Pignite gets one shot, gets two-shotted by Takedown. Doesn't even kill her either. None of my other Pokemon are leveled. Erased. I'm done. I quit. So then I do what you're talking about, where I go forward into Pinwheel Forest, and I'm like, okay, let's go on a little bit of a training arc. They clearly want me to catch another fighting-type Pokemon. The only thing I'm able to find, I fight all the trainers. It's like pretty long. Like, you can go pretty far into the forest. But it's not like a Viridian Forest where there's like a ton of grass. It's just like, there's a decent amount of grass, a decent amount of trainers. It's not, there's no puzzle to it.
Mm-hmm.
I caught a bunch of timbers, or I started noticing a lot of timbers, and I caught one, and I was like, okay, I think timber is what they want me to use.
It's going down. I'm yelling timber.
I am yelling timber. My arrogant ass was like, okay, I caught a timber. It's level 15. Let's go. Ass kicked. Again.
Alan, you're cringe. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I know I'm cringe. I embrace it. Timber is not equipped for this.
Well, certainly not at level 15 fighting a level 20.
So then I was like, okay, what the game wants me to do is just level timber. So I start fighting all the rest of the trainers with my Timber up first, switching to Pignite. It's so tedious, but I get Timber to like level 18, level 19. Timber's about to hit level 20. And then I just find a Throw, the Pokemon Throw, which is the rare spawn of Pinwheel Forest. Not the rare spawn, but it's just a low chance spawn, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it's not in Wiggling Grass. It's just a low chance spawn. And it's like, it's level 20 and has insanely high defense. And I was like, what was I doing? What? They gave me an easy... And to be fair, it's a low chance spawn. Like, your options are basically either to grind something until you're strong enough or to get the rich, lower chance spawn, and then you will win this fight. As soon as I had the Throw, I didn't even have to level it at all. It destroyed Lenora.
Yeah, it's a 10% spawn, which is like, you know, that's not crazy low, but also sometimes you just get unlucky, you know?
Yeah, I think I fought more than 10 guys, maybe.
Obviously, you got Throw, I got Sock.
Yep.
But these are both just like, they're, you know, they're inspired by like the sort of red and blue Oni myths, but they're just karate men.
Yeah.
I guess Sock is more karate, Throw is more judo, but they're just dudes.
They're just fully dudes. They're not very inspired designs. It gives me the sense that Pinwheel Forest is just a place where like townies and like construction workers hang out. Like, there's Timber and there's Sock and Throw, and occasionally there's like some other stuff here.
Well, it's especially because there's the Challenge Rock nearby, right?
I think I saw the Challenge Rock. What does that do?
Okay, so the Challenge Rock, first of all, it has two like black belt trainers by it who will challenge you, and you get really weird music when they encounter you. I'll play a little bit here, obviously, under the podcast, but there's this weird, spooky theme when you encounter them. And then, of course, the battle is just normal music. But the Challenge Rock is a rock, just a big rock on the ground, that if you have a fighting-type Pokemon, they can attempt to break it. And they will fail. They are guaranteed to fail. But once a day, they can attempt, and you will break off a piece of it that's a star piece that you can sell for a lot of money.
Oh. I gotta take note of that.
Also of a note, right before we take this, so you can go straight into Pinwheel Forest. We did not do that because that's sort of where the next part of the game starts. Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, so, well, actually, because I wasn't sure how far we were progressing at first, that's why I was asking you, like, where do you want to stop? Spoiler, well, let's just get there. I went there because of the story takes you there next, and I started to push into it a little bit. But you can go there, and initially, if you try to go there, just Team Plasma blocks the way, and they're like, fuck you, we're doing work here. You can't come.
So the way I was thinking we would do it basically is just you figure out where the boundaries were, right, before the gym. And then after the gym, you can walk up to them but not cross them.
Makes sense. Okay.
So
basically entering that part of Pinwheel Forest.
Right. But yeah, in this outside part of Pinwheel Forest, I mean, there are a bunch of other trainers. There's also a type of trainer that's new to Gen 5 that is my favorite type of trainer. There are the nurses and there are also doctors, which are the same type, right? Which are trainers that, one, will not challenge you on sight. You have to talk to them. And two, once you've beaten them, they are just portable Pokemon centers. They'll just heal your Pokemon.
I love this. I'm obsessed with this design decision. I'd love to be there in the meeting where someone was like, okay, we want them to grind here, but they're going to get annoyed because they have to run back to the Pokemon Center over and over. Can we just put a trainer in here and justify why she stays here and heals you infinitely? Okay, you have to fight her once. That's fine. Ship it. Brilliant. Amazing. No notes, Pokemon Company. Thank you for this. This is so useful.
I'm really looking forward to, I have a distinct memory of, like, there is a sort of a tonally like a Mount Moon equivalent in this game, right? Like a pretty long cave dungeon. And you fight your way through and you do like a mini boss fight. And they're like, well, curse you, I'm gonna go deeper into the second half of this dungeon. And you're like, fuck, I'm still not done. And you take a step forward past the boss and you see a doctor and you're like, oh.
Yeah. It lets them do different things with dungeons. It lets them pace dungeons differently.
Yeah.
And create grinding spots like this. Like, I literally just ran around the grass next to her and would like, get into three fights, heal, get into three fights, heal. And it was perfect.
Why the fuck didn't I do that?
Why would you leave? The grass is all the same everywhere.
Why did I not do that?
Yeah. Don't even move away from her at all.
God. Okay.
So you beat Lenora and you get the basic badge. I just want to briefly say that the design of the basic badge is silly. It's a straight line. I miss Gen 4 when you could polish the badges. Such a dumb mechanic, but it added a tactility to owning badges that no other game has had. Like, I don't know what any of the badges in Gen 6 through 10 look like, because you never have to look at them after you get them. You have no reason to.
Yeah, give it a month. I won't remember what this badge looks like.
I only know this one because it's a straight line. Like, it's the most generic. It's like absurdly generic. But the other ones, yeah, I don't know what they look like. But in Gen 4, you had to scrub them to keep them clean.
I will say the badge, the badge get animation is so absurdly over the top, is that it kind of works, because it's like the you have a case and like you flip the case around and open it. It's like you're not holding the case so you can just open it towards yourself. You have to like flip it over and spin it around and then swirl it open, and then badge spins into view and then snaps into place, and the case snaps and spins and swirls and goes away, and you're like, I just have to imagine like this kid just like doing like Here Comes the Airplane with their fucking gym badge case before putting a badge in. And Lenora's there just like face palming.
Exactly, like in front of the gym leader being like, thank you. Badge. You're like, okay, nerd.
I can't believe I lost this child.
10-year-old. Haas comes into the gym and says, hey, Lenora, Team Plasma's stealing bones again. Holy shit, we run outside. Team Plasma has stolen the gigantic skull from the dragon in the front of the museum. Claiming, quote, we claim this dragon skull in the name of Pokemon liberation. What do you think they're going to do with that dragon skull, Six? Anything cool?
They're going to clone it.
And that.
Do you know Dry Bowser?
Oh.
It's going to be like Dragonite. Wow, Dragonite. That's good.
Sure. Let them cook. They're not cooking. The fire's not on. So speaking of gym leaders being people, Lenora briefly says, here's Berg. He's Castellia's gym leader. Go with him and stop Team Plasma. And we are allowed to go a little further into Pinwheel Forest, but not before Bianca hands us a dowsing machine.
It'll come in useful.
These are the things that let you find the little hidden items, basically. Mm-hmm.
I use them in the first Pokemon game and then never tried again. I don't care.
They're dumb. I like the designs of them, but they're actually, like, you never get good stuff out of
this. You're better off having, like, a Lillipup in your party, because Lillipup will just generate items.
Yeah, right, and then just be picking them up.
Berg, we have heard about through our time in Nacrine City, because a lot of people are like, oh yeah, Berg's from here, and Berg always comes back when they need inspiration and they get, you know, artist's block, right?
Yeah.
And so Berg shows up and is like, I'm here because I have artist block again. And Lenora's like, well, you need to help us. There's, you know, Team Plasma, as you said, that whole thing happens.
Yeah, Berg's the guy who left his hometown and moved to the city.
Mm-hmm.
What is the role of gym leaders in Pokemon then? Are they a peacekeeping force? Are they the police?
Why
is it the gym leader's responsibility to stop Team Plasma?
I feel like we see this a little bit in other gens as well, to varying extents. I feel like originally it was really just like a sports. It was like, what if, you know, I mean, I guess what it's based on is the idea of, like, you know, martial arts dojos in, like, Japan back in the day, where people would come to challenge a school or whatever, right? Is sort of what it's based on.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think there is this idea now of, like, they, like, the gym is part of the community, and the gym leader is, like, ergo one of, if not the strongest trainers in town, and so they have a responsibility to address local problems.
Makes sense. They basically own, they have jurisdiction of their own area, and so because Team Plasma is between Castellia and Nacrine, they're like, we both have to do this right now. This is both our jobs.
Well, and I think it's just like, you know, it's Pokemon. Every NPC who's not on a villainous team is a good person. And so they're just like, oh, there's a problem, I will help.
Exactly. Makes sense. I appreciate that about them, that they're all helpful. And again, like I said, it's just, they're in the story. This is, like, kind of revolutionary, I'm telling y'all.
Yeah.
The gym leaders matter to the story. It's not just go to the people, beat them, and go to the next people. It's like, there's this evolution. There's, like, characters that have relationships with each other. They have a past with each other. It's really good. And also, I really want to emphasize, Lenora is one of the coolest gym leader designs I've ever seen. I love her outfit, her big flared pants. I love her hair.
She looks great.
I love her earrings. It's great. It's,
however, awesome, we do have to double back to Haas at this point.
Yeah, what's up with Haas?
I think he's a plant.
Hot or Haas? Why is he a plant? Like a ficus? Oh, I already made it. Literally made this.
You literally made the ficus joke even.
All right, just tell the kids. I'm going to bed.
Okay. So he's like, Team Plasma's here, right? Doesn't, yeah, like, he's not doing anything. He's just like, oh, he just steps back. He's like, Team Plasma, you know, which is like, okay. I mean, you could have done something. And you step forward and then they steal the skull and you get like little like exclamation, like, huh? Surprise bubbles over yourself and Lenora, and he's standing right next to you, and he does not react. He is not surprised by what has just happened. And then Lenora runs off, and you turn to him, and you're like, what the fuck? And he's like, his line literally is, oh, like, I guess we should do something. It's like, bro, he works for Team Plasma. He
I'm
is like,
tell you.
He's bribed on the sly.
It's a fun theory. How about this? I'll tell you what he looks like in the anime, and that'll let you decide if he's a plant. That's Haas in the anime.
Really could go either way.
Here's him standing next to his wife.
That can't be to scale.
I don't think that's to scale. I think the listener, this is a picture where Haas is much shorter. And
he's
also looks like Watchog.
It'd be like he's 5'2" and Lenora's like 7 foot. It'd be amazing.
I do think she's taller than him. I do believe that. Sorry, I'm just looking at Haas Lenora fan art right now. My bad. they're cute. Whatever. I don't know. I don't have anything to say about that theory because I don't want to spoil it for you. But we'll allow it to play out as the story does.
And then if you turn and talk to him during all of this, he just says, Lenora loves that skull.
She did love that freaking skull, damn.
Like, okay, man.
Weird, more than she loved me. That's why I stole the skull. Wait! God. Any other notes on Nacrine City, on Lenora and Haas, or Route 3?
I think my only other note is just a quick little... One of the random buildings in town is a dude who is selling battle items out of his house, like it's a shop, which is interesting of its own. It's like, okay, maybe he's home. Maybe this is the artist city. Maybe he's home crafting his own items. But then, like, the way all of these houses are structured is like they sort of have like a sort of ground, like warehouse floor, and there's like a raised area that you'd imagine is for like management, right? Or like an office would be. And on his little raised like terrace are two martial artists just yelling at each other? Like, what is happening here?
No questions, no notes.
Yeah, and then it's next time we're going to be heading into Pinwheel Forest. Proper.
We are. It's not too dense from the little bit that I jumped ahead. Not to spoil it for you, but after Pinwheel Forest, we get the major city of Pokemon Black, Castellia City, which, if you don't remember, and if you haven't played this game before, is very big. I would say, annoyingly big.
Mm-hmm.
Pace yourself running around. We'll have so much to say about the highways and byways of Castellia. We'll both get to redeem our Liberty Passes and be introduced to a new friend, finally, and really get this playthrough cooking. We're going to get to see one of the first bridges, which uses some of the game's cute 3D effects. And then, yeah, we're going to fight the third gym leader, which is Berg. That's obvious. That's, mm-hmm. you know. And yeah, we're going to talk all about Castellia. I'm really looking forward to it. I remember being excited to get to Castellia and being annoyed with how big it was when I first played this. So that's the thought I had in my head.
I think we will enjoy it a lot more now that we are playing it, like, in this format where we were going to be spending, if we want, 2 weeks here. The size of it will be less of a problem. Yeah, I think it gives us time to, like sort of, we're not rushing. We have time to sort of, like, settle down and, like, just, like, sort of really chew over what we're seeing. And also, Alan, I believe we're going to get an XP share.
Oh, let's fucking go? Okay.
I'm ready for it. I'll feel very bad if that's wrong. I should check if that... No, yes. Okay, wait. Yes, that's correct. We will get an XP share. We will get an XP share.
Good. Who are you giving it to?
I don't think that's how it works.
Oh, is this one that you turn on?
This is one that you turn on, and it's like the active Pokemon gets half the XP, and the other half is divided among everyone else.
Interesting.
Okay. I think is how it works.
President of the Battle Company. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Great. An incredible six. Yeah.
What are you gonna say? Really looking forward to it. I just wanted to end with like a check-in of like, so what does your team look like right now? I mean, I can go first.
Yeah, six. How about you tell me your team first while I fire this up?
Okay. So going from like highest to lowest level, I have a level 22 Pig Knight. I have a level 15 Audino. I have a level 14 Pan Sage. I have a level 14 Muna. I have a level 13 Blitzel, and I have a level 7 Patrat as my HM Mule. Fun, like, complete coincidence. All of these, it's like the first one I caught when in my my party, right? Five females, one male.
Wow.
Just how it happens. Just, you know, everybody loves Raymond.
They do. Okay, I have... So, let me see if I can do this high to low. Yeah. I have a level 23 Pig Knight. I have a level 17 Throw. I have a level 17 Timber. I have a level 15 Pansage. I have a level 12 Timpole. So I have some water-type coverage eventually. Nice. There are not enough water-type Pokemon early on in this game. That's a thing that they improved incredibly fixed in Black and White 2. And then I have a level 8 Muna that is just my Yawner. So I think Taya... The Timber is going to be my HM Mule for a while when I start, once we need HMs again, but we don't right now, and Patrat's busy getting jacked over at Route 3.
Understandable. I'm going to be looking to do some replacing of this. Like, I'm hoping in this next episode, I definitely want to get rid of Pansage. Pansage is kind of pathetically weak.
Yeah, you need a better grass type.
And I wouldn't mind replacing Blitzel. I kind of want to keep Audino, even though Audino isn't very good. but we'll see. I could very well swap Audino for Victini, so that might be what happens.
Oh, right. We're going to have to put Victini in here. What typing is it? Fire?
Fire Psychic.
Oh, interesting.
So some overlap with our starter, but Psychic, and also Victini fucking rules.
Absolutely. Spoiler alert, Victini rules. Yeah, I'll figure something out to do with that, with the homie.
Yeah. All right, No, I think that's it.
Wow. Well, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on both Twitter and co-host at SixDetmar, SixDetmar, where my DMs are open for any questions, comments, listener requests, anything like that. If you have something to say about Scanline Media, that's a decent place to send it. Speaking of which, this podcast and many others are on scanlinemedia.com, and also we have work at patreon.com/scanlinemedia. That's all of the stuff we do. We work very hard. We'd appreciate your support. Alan, what about you and your stuff?
My main other podcast is Chats, the television podcast. That can be found at chatspod.com, or just look wherever you look at podcasts for CHATZ Chats. We're doing Couch Madness, and we're doing different TV shows that we talk about. And eventually, once one of them wins the matchups, we're going to watch it in its entirety. We've got some really great contenders right now. So check out Couch Madness on Chats. I have other gigs. You can find them. I plug them elsewhere. It's fine. No social media. Fuck that.
Okay. Sounds good.
You know what else sounds good, Six?
What's that?
Music in this game.
It does. It does. We, we'll have some popping up as we go, but there isn't... I felt like there wasn't a lot standout besides the weird challenge rock music, which I'll have to play for you after this or something, because apparently you didn't catch it, but...
I don't usually play the game muted, but anyways, something else that sounds good is the fact that this is a game for kids, so let's be adults.
Peace.